Science Fiction Scrooge.
Who's there? I'm Scrooge Master.
It matters not. Approach.
Who are you?
Do you not recognize me?
I don't see how. You're constantly shifting, taking form. Yet you look somewhat familiar.
Of course. I am what many once knew, yet now I'm not.
What are you?
I do not know. I want to be one person, but then another. However, I am what you already know, for I am the ghost of Sci-Fi Present.
None of this is making sense.
I know. Join me, and let us see the present state of science fiction. Much like my form, it bewilders. Sci-Fi Malady, Symptom 135, Episode 9, Ghost of Sci-Fi Present.
It is finally here, folks, sickies. It is now. The saga has finished. It has concluded. And Episode 9 has finally wrapped up the Skywalker saga. A saga which, incidentally, we thought had finished. But we'd been told was not.
Stop already, JJ. It's already dead.
Stop killing it, please.
Yes. In fact, I'm going to ask Scott that in that little intro soliloquy, the belch stays because it's indicative of what we've been going through. So.
Oh, the belch was never coming out. I might isolate. Oh.
You might. That could work. It could be the Barney belch.
It'll be like when we rated how many disgusted belches do you give this?
Yeah. Or the, you could do how many of those we could do. Anyway, episode 9 is finally out. And I could say, before we get into anything, my overall feeling is relief. It's over! It's over, folks! It's over! The travesty is over!
You no longer spell relief R-O-L-A-I-D-S. You spell it E-P-I-S-O-D-E 9.
Well, yeah, also, that's until Disney decides we need more cash from this series and starts making them again.
Well, they are going to make more movies, which I don't know about that. But at least.
What was that episode of The Simpsons? No one knows how long it'll go between now and the time that the show becomes unprofitable.
Yeah.
But at least the Skywalker saga, a saga which I have shouted at the top of my lungs since the beginning that should not be done, at least it's over. The train wreck is over. The surgery is done. I can stop
watching. The patient
is
dead on the table.
We can bury this thing.
Well, you know, I went to DudeIWantThat.com and ordered the Men in Black flashy thing. So once this episode is over, we can all use it on ourselves and pretend nothing happened after Jedi.
Yeah. Awesome. Awesome. Great. Can we do that with everyone, including the creators, so that when we see this, we can go, I guess that doesn't exist after all.
If it doesn't work, I have a Dr. Nick Riviera-esque neurosurgeon ready to perform frontal lobotomies on us to remove this from our memory.
Yay!
It's a risk we lose everything back to 2012, though.
You know what? Fine.
We
can make videotapes so that we can remind ourselves of things we need to remember.
You know what? That's fine, because I'll be even happier when I go home and realize I'm married to a gorgeous woman. That just will make me even happier. So let's jump on, but let's just dive in now that I've gotten my overall feeling out of the way. Before we start ripping into this thing, we have to have Scott play devil's advocate, because if he doesn't do that, he'll have a heart attack. And let's talk about what was good. And we'll let Scott start, because pretty much I have two or three things that I can go through quickly, and two or three of them probably Scott's going to mention.
I know. I'm terrible. I you know.
You are! Just go!
Try to find the positives in things instead of just being, it stinks! It stinks! But,
Jay Sherman has points, okay? He was a good critic.
It stinks! No. there were things in this movie that if you take it on its own and you separate it from the disaster that was Episode 8, make this a good effort. This was the best effort they've had. I think that I wish they would have started with this movie, because I think they started figuring out, J.J. Abrams especially, how to make a Star Wars film.
Though he still does too many mystery boxes.
The low bar here was, that's never going to go away. There was a low bar when I say that the new characters have never been more interesting, because it wasn't hard to make them more interesting than they had been.
Wow, it's a sculpt brick of instead of just a brick.
Poe Dameron is at his best in the whole trilogy in this movie.
Yeah.
Finn, you gave Finn something to do that made sense in this movie, and he was good. John Boyega plays that character well. I can take nothing away from his acting. It's overall okay character, nothing memorable, but hey, he does a good job. You minimized the agendas that you had in there because this is not supposed to be a social commentary. You minimized that, toned it down, didn't sacrifice what you believe in doing it, and you were able to tell a fun and exciting, entertaining story. Rey actually trains, has somewhat of a truncated heroine's journey.
However, I will point out, as I did before, that this is the treatment that Abrams gets. It's like Star Trek Into Darkness. I took care of that Kirk getting promoted too fast thing by having him get busted down in rank. It lasted 5 minutes, but I tried. And that's my point.
The humor in this movie was on point when it was there. I thought they did a mm-hmm. better job with that. It felt more like Star Wars. There was some phenomenal acting jobs turned in by Ian McDiarmid with the Emperor. Stepping back into a character you haven't played in 16 years is not easy to do, and he did it. It might have been his best role as the Emperor in this movie with what he had to work with. As an actor, how he had to work with the limitations. Adam Driver as Kylo Ren has got better and better as the movies have gone on in that role, and he found that role by the end. Anthony Daniels is at the best he's ever been in the trilogy. C-3PO steals the show. There was a lot of stuff that was done very, very well. From a filmmaking perspective, just a cinematography perspective, you put Carrie Fisher in major roles in this movie. And I didn't know that she was dead. I wouldn't know that she was dead. It's not jarring. It doesn't take you out of it. They found a way to pretty much seamlessly put her throughout the vast majority of this movie and play an important role, and they didn't have her able to film anything. Yeah. That is tricky from a writer's perspective.
I think they only did
limited scenes to work with.
I think there's only like one CGI scene of her, and that's like the training.
The de-aging thing that they did with her and Mark Hamill.
Yeah.
That was phenomenal. You're really coming somewhere with that technology. It's not long now before we're going to see John Wayne release a new movie. They're getting very, you might see Cary Grant movies again. Well, they're getting to that point. And there was a lot of stuff that they did very well. It can't overcome the rest of the turd sandwich that this thing had become. There was no way you were going to land this plane without it crashing. There was no way you were going to land this thing without it being a disaster. You're looking for a Sully in the Hudson River here.
The best thing you were hoping for was to be able to walk away from this crash.
You got out alive.
Yeah.
You got everybody out of this movie. The franchise is alive. You can make another, you can move away from the Skywalker saga and do new movies and say, look, we really screwed up in 7, 8, and 9, but 9 is an example of us going in the right direction, getting a feel for the characters, getting a feel for what the base wants, and figuring out how to make something that feels like it could be Star Wars within this sandbox. That's where I think you're at with this. And was it good? No, it's not good. But there were good aspects of this when you were put, you couldn't have paid me to write Star Wars Episode 9 because it would be impossible. You could give me Ridley Scott, Harv Bennett, J.J. Abrams, Josh Whedon. You could give me Joss Whedon. You could give me every single person in. You could give me the greatest writer, Harlan Ellison. You could give me Isaac Asimov, the greatest writers of all time, John Clark. You can't save this. James Cameron.
This is where the Star Wars fan is going to put the Star Trek fan in his place. It saved it and made me think that this was going to keep, that Star Wars was savable. No, The Mandalorian did that.
Well, I'm just going to say, I don't think it was saved for the simple fact of in the theater, it ended. I heard one, maybe two claps from someone in the theater. And it wasn't like it was a empty theater. It was packed. Full theater.
Yeah. I agree.
One, maybe two. Everyone else I heard was either boos, basically, or just mutters of, it's over.
Clearly, The Mandalorian is the more important of the two things. But you had to come up with something that felt like Star Wars. Rogue One was a war story. Solo is a train heist. And Episode 8 is God knows what of stupidity. You have now gone three movies in a row without giving someone something that resembles Star Wars.
It didn't feel like Star Wars.
I would disagree with you in a way. I hate when I agree with Scott, but
it felt like the new iteration of what it can become. Nothing is going to feel like, in the same way that the prequels didn't feel like the original trilogy, this was never going to feel like the original trilogy or the prequels. It was going to be something different.
It felt most closer to Star Wars.
It got to be something that I can identify with as Star Wars, you know, and that's...
Hey, I could vomit out, I could go eat an Italian meal, vomit it out, and say, look, there's a couple pieces of pasta you can see. That doesn't mean you want
to
eat it.
Let me go back to my bread and butter.
It doesn't mean it looks like an attractive dinner.
Let me go back to my bread and butter. Star Trek Discovery does not feel like Star Trek. Star Trek Abramsverse does not feel like Star Trek. Star Trek Enterprise did. Star Trek Enterprise is inferior Star Trek. It's not good. But it was something that felt enough like Star Trek that I said, hey, I'm in the right world. Whereas in Discovery, I don't feel like I'm in the right world. Episode 9 at least made me feel like I was in the right sandbox. Whereas Episode 8 and Episode 7, I had massive problems.
So in simple terms, you're saying, at least we're in the sandbox. We might be in
We're back in the sandbox.
Okay. Right, we're in the corner of the sandbox where the cats have been pooping, but we're in the sandbox.
We're back in the sandbox.
Well, I'm going to say this, and then we'll move on.
That's a drinking game.
What's a drinking game?
When I say sandbox, take a shot.
So
please, I will say we do not endorse getting drunk and dying from drinking games.
I disagree. 7 felt more than 9 because 9 was rudderless, but 8 didn't feel like it at all.
I always said 7 felt like they at least were in the right sandbox, but Rogue One, Last Jedi, and Solo Solo felt almost like a Bond movie at points.
All right. So yeah. I will say the good things. C-3PO was the best character in the movie. They finally did something with him. I liked Rey's training sequence. That looked great. That looked like it should. And, what was the other thing? I think there was one other thing. What was it? Didn't I say it, Scott, after the movie? Didn't I say one other thing I liked?
Yeah, but I can't remember it.
Yeah, see, it doesn't matter then. It must not be good.
I'd at least say the effects were good, and I mean...
Yeah, look, the look was never wrong. Oh, that's it! It was that one planet where they were celebrating and where they found Lando first and that whole celebration. I thought that looked really cool and neat until they got into their little chase scene. But up until that moment, And before you say, oh, Lando was in it, that's good. Did you see him with the cane? No, it felt painful.
Also,
it's like taking LeBron James 50 years from now and putting him on the court. Nobody wants to see that.
Yeah, also, here's the thing. You're not having him as a pilot again? Dude, there's a reason why you don't see 50-year-olds flying F-22s. After you hit like 26, you're out of the pilot
seat. Have Lando be like a tactical planner, that I'd go with, sure. But in the thick of things?
No, I'm sorry.
That's what I want. I want the old man with arthritis and a cane flying the fastest ship I have in the fleet.
Yeah.
No good. So... Let's get on to, there's a lot of nitpicks and gripes, but before we get to that, I want to do something a little structured because what I need to do, what we need to do is cover some of what I feel are the big picture thematic problems with this film. The things that are overall wrong with it before we get into the nitty gritty things that could be endless. And the first thing, I don't think we need to say a whole lot about this because a lot has already been said, but it's clear there was no outline to this trilogy. It is clear that they sat down and Abrams came up with some vague ideas and he made mystery boxes because that's what he does. And that was it. No one had a clue. And that was the end of it. And the same way that Palpatine. Oh, well, it was always planned for Palpatine to come back. I don't believe that. In episode 8, the novelization, Snoke was told to be hundreds of years old. I'm pretty sure, or at least a contemporary of Palpatine off to the side. I just don't feel like that was true. I think what happened was Rian Johnson came, you made a movie with no real plan. Then Rian Johnson came in and threw a spanner in the works. And then you came in and they tried to use you to wrap this up and you are incapable of doing it. I don't know. Does anyone else want to add? There's no outline to this and that's all there
so
is
I
to it.
So I think there was a vague concept and they wrote this story and they said, okay, the new hero, it's going to be a woman and it's Rey. We don't know about her. Her past is a mystery, and at the end of the first movie, we're still not going to know who she is. One of the vague outlines of this trilogy is going to figure out about who this Rey is, and we'll figure it out as we go. I don't think they had an answer. Is she a Skywalker? Is she a Kenobi? Is she Kenobuddy? Oh, she's a Palpatine. Okay, whatever. Okay, that's fine. I don't think that the plan was always to bring back Emperor Palpatine. Because if it was the plan to bring back Emperor Palpatine, then it would have made sense for him to be Snoke. And once Rian Johnson, if JJ always had a plan to bring back Palpatine, then he had to have always been Snoke. Or Snoke would have been Darth Plagueis, would have made more sense. But if it was, he should have been Snoke, just horribly disfigured again from somehow surviving death. And then you find that out at the end, and the dyad restores him to his Ian McDiarmid appearance. And then you could bring back the actual Emperor. But I don't think that was the plan. No. If it was, Rian Johnson killed it as soon as he just had Snoke killed in a... Man, he went out worse than Darth Maul.
Yeah.
At least Darth Maul took out Qui-Gon first.
Yeah, at least it was a fight.
Yeah. Well, honestly, the biggest issue... This... All right, when Marvel has done their things, they...
I think you also had... Sorry, one more thing. I think you also had a vague plan for... The New Republic is losing. It can't hold on to what it won. The remnants of the Empire reorganized into something else. Oh, it's the First Order. And they're going to be losing. And then Rian Johnson went and just torched it again. I think at the end of that, it should have been more like at the end of Empire, where you see them on the run, but still an effective force, not fitting in the Millennium Falcon. But I think there might have been vague plans of the New Republic is losing. Leia's leading a new battle of the military wing of the New Republic against a reformed, different empire. And there's a Sith extension of Palpatine, and who is Rey? And what happened to Luke and exploring Luke's failure? Okay, I think that was always part of it. But was there a real plan? No. Was any of it conveyed to Rian Johnson? No. If there was, Rian Johnson lit it on fire and urinated on it, and then took a steamer on it and threw it in the trash.
And we know that because also Rian Johnson held up those signs, "Your Snoke theory sucks." He went out of his way to agitate the fan base, which to me...
It was like sabotage.
It's like,
yeah,
wait
he burnt it to the ground
wait
almost on purpose.
The people who are going to give you lots of money... You decided to insult them?
It made no sense, and that's where it went off the rails. Thomas, what were you going to say before I rudely cut you off?
Well, I was just saying, again, this is Disney. We've seen Disney. They own Marvel. They've done it right. They've planned it out in Marvel from the beginning to the end. They have this whole story planned. I feel 100% that in this Star Wars, they had nothing planned. They didn't have one idea that the Emperor is coming back. They didn't know who, Rey's parenting was. They had nothing. They just basically stuck JJ in a room, gave him Star Wars and said, write a story. And being JJ, he wrote so many mystery boxes that it's like, well, here we go. We got a bunch of options. We can do go here, go here. Oh, it's on fire. It's burnt down. We got to fix this. And that's it. It feels like that. It was going in no direction, given a mystery box, and then just sabotaged. I can't think of another way of putting it. It was sabotaged. And from there, it went into this weird area where it's trying to save it, or at least walk away from the crash now. And it's like...
You can't.
Right.
There was no good way to do it.
There was no plan. There was no idea of where this was going or what was happening. It just happened, and it's you can see because it's like things are just being thrown out of left field where you go, where is this coming from? There's no setup for any of the stuff we're seeing here.
Which, that
it just appears. It's not like you see it coming.
And that's an interesting point. That goes on to, we'll skip ahead, to kind of two other points I wanted to make. One is a complete lack of satisfying explanation for anything.
Oh, any explanation for something?
The Resistance and First Order are kind of sort of explained if you read the book Bloodlines. And the Resistance coming back for this movie is kind of explained in the book Resistance Reborn. Neither Bloodlines is okay. It's not a satisfying explanation, but it's something. Resistance Reborn is indicative of the new novels. They give you a snippet, except it doesn't really explain much. And it's just unsatisfying. This Resistance Reborn is the only thing I can say about it is that it's all Poe's fault that everything happened the way it did. And yeah. So yeah, there's the lack of satisfying explanation and the fact that this story was, well, we'll get to the cluster bomb MacGuffin quest, but yeah, the fact that this movie, the whole trilogy, it just throws terms out. We're a force dyad. Oh my God, they're a force dyad. What's that? Or, oh my God, the Sith dagger that lines up with the Death Star. Wait, how's that?
Oh, how about a Sith Wayfinder?
Yeah. Ooh, they got a Sith Wayfinder. A what? And, oh, the Knights of Ren, they're
dead
right here, sorta. Or, oh, we got to find this thing to put with this thing and give to this guy and to do this. And, oh, it's just an endless series of weak exposition.
How about being a spice runner? What the?
Yeah, why? I know what that is, but, you know, why are you bringing that up now? Why does it matter?
Make them more like Han Solo.
I mean, it's just
new Han Solo's got to be more like old Han Solo.
I guess so, but
not my Han Solo.
It basically
not
is
my Han Solo.
Yeah, basically that's the big problem here. That going along with they had no plan. Now they just have to catch up to something, and
there was a ton riding on Rian Johnson.
There was, and here's the thing. Here, let me put it this way. Before I just hand it off to you guys, I was talking to my boss today that overall liked the movie. And all he kept talking about was the action. Action, action, action was good. Action, action. And he said the thing that exactly encapsulates this point. I had to enjoy the action because I couldn't follow the movie. There was too much going on that didn't make sense. His exact words. Which tells me, guys, sickies, Star Wars fans that liked this. I mean, go ahead and like it. Fine. I like Star Crash. But just admit that it's a disaster. I know Star Crash is a disaster. I know it sucks. Just admit that, because do not tell me this is good writing. Because the only defense I ever hear of this is nostalgia and action. That's it? That's your baseline action? Well, then, holy heck, Michael Bay is the greatest director and storyteller we ever had. Because that's all Michael Bay is, explosions and action. You just took Episode 9 and Armageddoned it. You just made it as low as Michael Bay movies.
So congratulations.
Yeah, but Scott recognizes Armageddon is not pure genius. Yeah. He enjoys it for what it is. Everyone's entitled to their guilty pleasure. And I think that's the problem with this lack of lack of direction, is that it just turns into you have to like it for the action.
I don't want to go too far down that road, because the bottom line is the most successful thing out there in film right now is the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And before that, the Harry Potter universe was, the Wizarding World is pretty successful. And
not the last two movies.
They're not. None of these things are tour de forces in storytelling and screenwriting.
No,
they're fun. They're fun. They're likable characters. They're memorable. Those are the things that are important in storytelling. Did you enjoy it?
Scott,
identify.
No, but you're comparing wrong, because when you look at the MCU, there's is it a superhero story? Yeah. Is it much more mythological like that? Yeah, it's a little simple. Yeah, but at least there's a buildup. When you get to Endgame, I'm not going, wait, what? Who's that? Wait, what is it? Wait, huh? Wait, wait, wait. No, what, huh? I'm not doing that at all. I'm rolling with it going, oh, okay. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Wow.
Well,
do you think it might have been that you were more willing to roll with Endgame because it was focused around Tony Stark and Steve Rogers and Doctor Strange and characters you came to know and love?
Scott, I think everybody knows that there was a buildup, and that's the point. There was no buildup here, and we already talked about
that. I'm going to agree but disagree with both of you, because my thought is Star Wars is very simply a mythology. It's good versus evil. It's very simple. Yeah, the only thing about science fiction in it is it's in space. Really.
Ah, I forgot to give my thing. I don't think this is science fiction. Right. This is Rage Master's.
We've heard it a million times.
I need to throw it back out there.
Fine, but I'm agreeing with you in some ways because this is mythology. Because of that, this is good versus evil. It's simple, but you're supposed to have a solid story. You're supposed to have the good, the evil, the solid story is supposed to be there. And that's it, because it's a mythology.
No, you don't have a good story.
You don't.
I agree with you on that. What I'm saying is you are far more willing to accept bad story when it's supported by good characters that you like and a movie that you enjoy and you watch.
I would agree with
you, I've said it a million times. The story for Star Trek IV is the worst thing that was ever created. We're gonna remerge Spock's consciousness with his radiated body.
Yeah. Okay.
Correction. You are happy with that. Yeah.
Many people are happy. It's considered to be the second best movie in the entire franchise outside of Khan. And some people like it more than Wrath of Khan. It's about a probe that comes to talk to whales. Movie, The Voyage Home.
Star Trek 2 is way better than 4.
There's a lot of people who will tell you, when you talk about the best Star Trek movies, Khan is usually one. And the one with the whales is usually 2.
Well, you Trekkies are another breed.
It's a terrible story. No one's acting in character. And it's a probe that flies to talk to whales. Why? Because whales. It's a horrible story. But you love the characters, and you're entertained, and so it becomes great. You're far more willing to do that. Endgame is not a good story. Because the lead-up to Endgame and Infinity War left you in a spot where you had an overpowered villain that made no sense on how to kill that villain. And look, if you really want to go down the route of tearing apart Endgame, I don't think it's going to stand up to criticism 20 years down the road. I think it's one of those things, as you get further and further away from it, Endgame becomes more and more not so good.
I can't wait to see how wrong you are.
We look the other way because we enjoy Endgame, and everyone will look back at it with nostalgia lenses. But anyway, back to episode 9. There was
for Saddam
no chance
to launch nukes at us, Scott.
There was no choice. I've admitted I'm wrong about that forever. I was 8. But, or 10. Endgame, or not Endgame. Wow, I'm way off now.
Yeah.
Episode 9. Thank God it's over. Dear God, thank God it's over. Dear God, why did we do this?
Agreed. But
there was no chance.
No.
You were left with a spot. Rian Johnson, it's the ultimate no-win scenario. The Resistance fits in the Millennium Falcon. The Emperor's back because, well, he's back. So you don't have the time to explain that. So he's just got to be back with something like, my powers, considered by many to be unnatural.
Yeah.
A dyad in the Force is there because a book will explain it later, need it to be. The Force is now a transporter because we need it to be. The Resistance is back again because we need it to be. We can get this flying Dunkirk Navy in space because populism.
Right. And also because we need it. You know,
that's the only option you have.
And this movie also did this whole MacGuffin search because it needed something different because the others did not work at how they did it. They wanted to do the whole go here, go here, go here. And in some ways, it works because of just, let's be honest, I don't know how you explain them what the way of this movie plot summary would be, but you're going after something, finding it that leads you to another thing that leads you to it works as a movie. It has always worked in movies, so
that's why it's there,
right? And it's like, okay, I get it. Was it overused and was it terrible? Yes, absolutely.
It's the equivalent of hack and slash structure writing in a game.
It was there because it was there. I mean, good grief, there were too many MacGuffins, and the MacGuffins were stupid. None of them were good, but it's, I mean, yeah. And the other problem I have, big picture wise, is in some ways it just kills the whole movies before. It kills the whole, you know, the whole Skywalker thing.
Right. That's, I think, well, but before I jump on that, let's.
Okay.
So it looks. I also want to mention over escalation.
And oh, you mean Death Star Star Destroyers?
Death Star Star Destroyers, Force Ghosts that can attack everything. And I know, let me make this argument.
Super
so
Force
we can,
Lightning?
Let's get on with this. So let me just nail this down before we take too long on this. Because we had this chat before that, before recording. Yes, Yoda's alive and he could have learned how to affect everything. And yada, 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 blah, blah, blah. Here's why you don't do that. Here's why you don't have Force Ghosts attack have physical manifestations. For the same reason that you don't do the Holdo maneuver. Congratulations, you just defeated the point of half of your story. This is why you don't have teleporters that could teleport from a ship halfway across the universe. Because why have starships now? This is why you don't let your starships intercept other starships and warp. Because what's the point? What's the point of escaping by warp now? Whenever you over-escalate, this is why you don't put Death Star lasers on Star Destroyers. This is why you don't have light speed skipping. Yes, you can make all of these up. But you don't do it because now what you've essentially done is, well, now there's no limits and we can't make a story. And now you're just writing a really bad D&D adventure.
Well, I mean,
which is what this movie is.
They did that in 7 when you had the super Death Star.
Well, exactly. And they just ramped it up. It's typical J.J. Abramsism. Just ramp it up and over escalate. And I don't know what to do now. So.
Well, it's like, well, now what? 10,000 Star Destroyers. Okay, that's a lot of Star Destroyers.
Where did they come from? I don't know. No explanation.
We'll just hand wavy them that way. But then it's like, okay, so what now? Oh, I know. Every single one of these 10,000 Star Destroyers also has a laser
that could destroy a planet.
With and people Death crewing Star. Them.
Yeah.
You what? Trained a navy.
What's the explanation?
I don't know. Something just hit me and I can't believe I didn't bring this up before. Okay. Remember, this movie actually again humanizes all the stormtroopers. You find stormtroopers who escape. Remember Rebel Mutiny?
Yeah, that one. That we're not going to follow that thread. We don't have time.
Well, wait. Finn also humanizes them, but then also celebrates when he's killing them.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
Also, how many of these stormtroopers were killed? Because you wrecked 10,000 ships, all crewed. How many brainwashed kids did you just kill?
That's exactly a point, because... Oh, we're supposed to show how sad it is that these people were kidnapped. You just killed them all. See, that's, again, what happens when you try to introduce more nuance than you need to.
You guys, cue Rage Master's head exploding in 15 seconds. I would absolutely pay money to see the reboot of the Star Wars franchise telling episode 4, 5, and 6, 1, 2, 3, and 7, 8, and 9 from the perspective of the Empire, and that the Rebel Alliance is really just a group of anarchist terrorists destroying the stability and order of the galaxy. I would pay money to see this from the other side, with the Jedi being dogmatic religious extremists, and the Sith being pragmatists.
I agree with you. Absolutely.
I would love to tell this story from the other side.
Dude, I'm
humanist Picard.
Okay. If I look at it, I am agreeing with you because many times I look at it and go pro Empire.
We can't all be Captain Picard, man. If we were all Captain Picard, we'd be perfect.
I don't know where that came from. Final... I wasn't talking like that.
What?
So the last part, the last big picture problem with this, which goes back to the whole point I've been screaming about why they shouldn't continue this saga, it ended by bringing back Palpatine, by saying Rey is the new big force baddie. So in other words, 1 through 6 was about the Skywalker family and the redemption of that family and the defeat of evil and balance of the force. Not anymore. Now, Anakin is just a guy who did something once. And the Skywalkers don't even matter anymore, unless Rey, I want to find my own identity, but I can't, so I'm just going to take on the Skywalker name, even though I'm not. So really, the Palpatines have taken over, not the Sky. It's not really the Rise of Skywalker, it's the Rise of Palpatine.
You told six movies. It is. It should have been called The Rise of Palpatine, but that would have given everything away too early. But the first six movies are
useless.
Are now. The redemption, are the fall and redemption of Anakin Skywalker. These three movies are the redemption of the Palpatine family name.
Yep.
Through Rey.
So
should have been that way.
So therefore, it's not the Skywalker saga. Anakin doesn't matter. I mean, Anakin shows up as a
prophecy doesn't matter.
Yeah. Everything.
Well, what is the prophecy at this point?
Who cares? Who cares?
No, there's no balance to the
what
Force.
Prophecy?
You've eliminated the Sith from the galaxy. You haven't balanced anything.
So,
the religious dogmatic extremists have won.
So, in other words...
Oh, but it's a new form of the Jedi.
Yeah, whatever. The whole thing eliminated the need for 1 through 6.
Well, but there's even more problems. This is the problem with the entire movie. You took a base of characters that generations fell in love with over the course of 30 years. And we watched and cheered and rooted for our heroes. Yoda, Obi-Wan, Leia, Bail Organa, 3PO, R2-D2, Padme, Lando.
We were happy when
Luke,
Anakin was redeemed.
Right. We watched this. We would have felt more conflicted when Anakin fell if Hayden Christensen could act. But we went through all of this and we rooted for all of this. And then we had our dark moment in 3, but it made 4 so much better. And it led into 4 perfectly. And then when you get to that end of Jedi, you're satisfied because good triumphed. It got deterred along the way, but good found its way. The Skywalker name was redeemed. The Republic was redeemed. Things were set right again. Yoda's sacrifices, Yoda's failures, everyone's failures meant something.
Not anymore.
25 years later, these bumbling imbeciles threw it all away. Our heroes became the morons who lost what they won. Strong enough to win the world, but weak enough to lose it. Rush.
Still
on the rush line. But at any rate, you turned them all into bumbling morons. Luke quits and runs away like a pansy and then explains that I'm scared.
Oh, but then at the very end, he decides he's wrong because Rian Johnson's genius.
Yoda runs away. I guess the trademark of a Jedi is you run away when things get tough.
Yeah.
I'm going to run and hide in the cave.
But here's the
Yoda, I'm going to run and hide in the jungle.
Here's the difference, though. When Luke showed up for Yoda, it was, got to train him so he could take over. Luke, on the other hand, no, he should all die. I need to make a bunch of journalists go,
I'm
going to
drink blue milk straight out of this animal.
No, it's green milk, and it came out of his wiener.
No, but like, hey, Yoda, I got to hit this one more time. We're not going to be able to do this. You fought Palpatine to a draw, and you lost.
Fight! Why didn't you fight? Go back
go
and fight!
Go get another lightsaber and fight him
go
now!
Go fight! I'm an angry guy! Fight!
Fight him now! Don't wait! Well, I fought once, I lost, I got to go. It's like Palpatine. I fought him, they blew up the Death Star, we're done.
Well, we had this chat. You say that only because the expanded edition showed the Empire falling and you didn't allow for time lapse. So you just assumed they already died.
But, it undoes all of it. There's no point to watching 6.
No.
6 is, it rips the rug right out from under it. Everything, it takes that all away from you. You can't watch this now you can't.
Basically, you could just stop after they free Han.
And then it becomes about Palpatine's daughter saving the galaxy. Or granddaughter. Palpatine's granddaughter.
Yeah.
Which again...
goes back to lack of satisfying
Dune,
explanation.
The whole thing's about Duncan, Idaho in the end. Instead of Paul Muad'Dib or the Atreides. In the end, it's all about Duncan, Idaho. So in the end, this thing isn't about a Skywalker. We get down to the very end and it's about Palpatine's granddaughter.
Which again...
Come here so I can punch you in the throat.
Just going to say this also. This never need to be brought up that Palpatine actually had to have sex with someone.
Good. Do it. Good.
Okay, so those are the big picture thematic problems.
No, I think that's also a nitpicking problem on the...
If you only knew the power of the dark side.
All
right, sickies, now we have 2 minutes of Scott, so go ahead.
I'm done. Done.
No, you're not.
That's
you're
as
not.
Far as I can go without losing the family friendly rating.
Okay.
We want to keep the family friendly rating. So
I think right now it's time for nitpicks. And this nitpicks and gripes is really just individual problems with the movie, not necessarily.
I'm the spy!
not necessarily the whole narrative, but just individual problems. So let's start with General Hux, who is the spy, which makes sense, but is still very unsatisfying. And it had to be there for one reason, because 8 turned him into
a wuss.
So
it's, and you decide to make him a spy and also kill him within 5 seconds, revealing he's the spy. It's like, wow, this is the worst ever.
He was still given better treatment than Captain Phasma, at least.
I guess.
Because at least he talked and did something.
I guess, but yeah, that was, I'm the spy. It's like, oh, good grief.
I think another one for me is light speed skipping, huh? So you could just do that. And it reminded me a lot of the movie Valerian when he's running through all the different worlds and just runs through a door and all of a sudden he's in a new world. And then he goes through there and he jumps and he's swimming in water. And now he's jumping through the air. And it was exactly like that. We're in Bespin. Now we're in a jungle world. Now we're in this. Wait a minute. We've never seen this before ever. How long? You mean other people can do this too? And how did the ties get dragged through with him? Okay, what 7-year-old wrote this?
Yeah.
And yes, I just equated J.J. Abrams' writing style to a 7-year-old, because a 7-year-old could do better.
Okay, how about a great one? The new toy, which literally in the movie theater, I actually yelled this out loud and got a good laugh from it. Look, it's Disney's new toy.
The droid. What was the droid's name? Who cares?
I don't remember.
It's Lampshade.
That's what it looked like. It looked like a lampshade on a one wheel. And my problem with this, other than it being a stupid cash grab, it's an abused droid? What?
I mean, droids get abused, but geez. Are we going back to droid droids? I don't get.
Oh, please don't. Ah.
Oh, man. I'm all the Sith. I'm all the Jedi. The final adventure I wrote as a 19-year-old for the West End Star Wars game had Rage Master's Jedi, D'Tell and Quickstar, become the embodiment of every light side force user ever.
Using a force talisman that he had to go on a MacGuffin quest to find, by the way.
Yes. To fight the embodiment of all the Sith. And they each had like 100 times multiplier to their role, and they fought some epic battle.
Yeah.
I was 19. I'm not a writer. I was a kid goofing around playing West End game Star Wars and thought it was the coolest thing ever to add to my jungle planet where the only civilization was inside a dome. When you were committed a crime, you got exiled to the wilderness to die.
And Scott, I'm gonna be honest with you. I hated that. I did not like that.
I had you paired up with a bounty hunter who wore belts and killed people for fun.
I hated it for two reasons. One, that. And two, you forced me to get dark side points just because you couldn't do it any other time, because you were really bad at acting like the dark side. There was nothing insidious about you. There was nothing
just like
deceptive.
Palpatine. Don't kill him.
You
should kill that kitten.
Exactly. But it wasn't even just the words. It was the way he looked, like he was pushing, like, hey, why don't you do this? Hey, why don't you do that? Why don't you kill him? Just kill him. Kill him.
You see that guy walking down the road? You can just kill him and take his credits. It's like, that's an option.
Wow, Scott. The book says you should be like, you know, tricking me and making me think like it's a good idea. You are literally you are the creepy, goofy guy who is like, why don't you go ahead, kids, eat the candy. It's good for you. Eat the candy. The weird, goofy guy. Which even the dumb kid knows.
Steve Buscemi.
Yeah,
you are Steve Buscemi walking around with a skateboard going, hey, kids, let's all go to the mall.
Well, here's another great nitpick. What about the Emperor? He suddenly now has super force lightning.
That can destroy everything.
Which can now knock out all the ships. Which, again, can be blocked by one lightsaber, but if you use two lightsabers, that's the magic force of two lightsabers. Now we flex it back. One didn't, but two does.
Oh, because...
because two. But the other thing being, hey, Emperor, didn't we do this before with Mace Windu? Shouldn't you remember this part and stop using force lightning?
Or at least yell unlimited power.
Yeah, it's like, really?
Palpy's a slow learner. He did put one extra backup in this time, though, to his Star Destroyer fleet. When they destroyed the one on the surface, he did learn from that destroyed shield generator at Endor.
Yes, his backup is on a Star Destroyer, which, by the way, has a cavalry.
Which goes back to
has a cavalry charge on a Star Destroyer. What the?
Which, here's a good question. You mean to tell me that they don't have the coordinates to where they're supposed to go? Can you imagine that? I mean,
well, because they can't tell up from down, apparently.
You would think, oh yeah, it's the other thing. You're in a space battle where everyone's flying at the same level? What? It's called 3D, moron.
We have three dimensions to work with.
He's intelligent. It shows a lack of three-dimensional thinking.
Yeah, well, there's, again, there's a lot of things where you go, oh, boy.
Star Trek, zing!
Yeah, I got upset when they had a cavalry charge on a Star Destroyer.
They can't explain that, though, so that they can't lock down the speeders. They could lock the speeders down with the computer, so they use the animals.
I kind of get that, but that's stupid.
With this movie, I'm more okay.
Still
with that.
Dumb looking.
It's still dumb.
I will say one thing, and I should have thrown this out in what's good, and it's late, but I'm gonna throw it out now. When I rewatch Jedi now, and I see Palpatine tell Luke everything is unfolding exactly as I have foreseen it, or he tells Vader everything is unfolding exactly as I have foreseen it. Maybe he did anticipate losing there because his end game plan, he had looked all the way ahead to needing Rey, to needing Kylo Ren as the dyad to restore himself in the future.
Oh, but he's
seeing goes a long way.
No.
Keep reaching for the stars, Scott.
And he literally says in this film, oh, a dyad. Didn't see that one coming, basically.
No.
My counter is
Kylo
George
Ren
Lucas
says
did
what
not.
What the Emperor doesn't know is that we're a dyad. At that point, I'm like, oh, yeah, the Emperor knows. He's counting on it. He knows.
Scott, what you're basically doing is retroactive writing, which, nah.
Sometimes a retcon is good.
And okay,
not,
how about
not here? It isn't.
My nitpick, and this is when I knew I was in trouble.
The first line?
The first 5 seconds of the film. When the scroll. I'm sorry.
The dead speak.
Well, it's like, okay, let's go over all the other Star Wars. What's the opening scroll? A whole book, basically. You get a whole backstory. You get information. In this, you got three paragraphs. Three paragraphs.
The last thing done in post-production.
And it was short. Yeah. And they didn't do anything. It's like, oh, the Emperor's back. Awesome. That's your first paragraph. Paragraph two was, Rey, that Mary Sue, she's training. She's training, see? She's not Mary Sue, she's training. Three. Kylo is on a hunt to stop the Emperor and become all powerful.
He's hunting for the Emperor. And it starts with him.
That was your beginning three paragraphs of your movie. I knew I was in trouble.
Here's something that I'm never going to do. The big bad, the biggest big bad the galaxy has ever known,
announced
survived
himself.
The explosion of the Death Star, and he's been recuperating for 25 years, and he's ready to come back. I'm not hunting him. I'm fleeing as fast as I can with everything I can. It should be said in the same way with pants crapping fear. I'm thinking of Futurama. And Nixon's back! Palpy's back! And everyone just runs. Like, when he's walking around the monster body, you're all gonna pay.
Well, yeah, this is the thing where...
You'll go on down!
And this is the big bad guy now sends out a message to announce he's back, which is stupid. But, by the way, in the movie, it doesn't even give you the announcement. This is something that annoys the crap out of me. If you want to hear the message of Palpatine,
you
guess
to
where
play
you
Fortnite.
You had to listen in Fortnite event.
It's all about that cross sell.
Had to, excuse me.
All about that cross sell. Cross sell products.
Yeah.
In a bank long enough, you will hear all about the cross sell.
Oh yeah. It's annoying. It's annoying, okay? Cuz it annoys me. It adds to the list of stuff that annoys me about this.
Just when you thought you couldn't hate Fortnite more.
What, you don't want another
Then they make
dance?
A movie.
You
no,
want-
I'm sorry. It's called One Free Guy.
Don't give
them...
We all
know it's really just Fortnite.
Stop.
What?
Don't give them ideas. They made an emoji movie. Don't give them ideas to
they
make a Fortnite
made
movie.
They already the Fortnite movie. It's called that... It's the one that... it was that One Free Guy movie. It was a trailer
before
episode 9.
No, yes, but that's
basically Fortnite.
No, that is GTA. That is so GTA.
I just felt it was
Fortnite. Fortnite's something totally different than GTA.
Yeah, still, the movie still looks stupid, though.
Yeah, but maybe, but that Fortnite is just different. It's a battle royale dance-off thing. It's like,
oh, yeah, it's a dance-off, that's true.
Yeah.
Pointless.
You know, while we're still nitpicking, but I am really angry that Palpatine goes out the way that he does. That should have been tougher. It should have been a more difficult fight.
Oh, you
Palpatine
mean,
should have had some tricks. Again, the overpowered guy forgets every other power he ever has. And at this point, just remember, I can shoot force lightning.
Now, wait. If that bugs you, apparently one of the original endings has Rey just curb stomping him.
I'm like, where was the redone one where Rey doesn't just moss him all over the place and just destroy him overpowered in 2 seconds?
Or how about how about a big fight of lightsabers and an actual duel or force power? Right. And again, we're talking about the Emperor. Not just the Emperor. He's now the Emperor, but he's now souped up. So this is like him at his maximum power ever. Right. He should right now be so powerful. It should be a duel, a massive fight. And it's just like, nope.
How about Rey paying a cost to win that fight? Shooting her own force lightning and being scarred by it.
Yeah.
Disfigured by it, maybe. Okay? Paying a price. She doesn't pay a price. This is another problem I have with the whole movie.
Ugh.
No one pays a price. When Finn stays on the ship to take the command deck out, this time Finn should die.
Yeah.
It would be more powerful. It would at least add some emotional heft and hit to this movie. When 3PO gets his memory wipe, it should have never been restored.
Oh, he should be
you take his sacrifice away. And 3PO should have had another memory wipe like he did at the end of episode one, and that should have been it.
Well, they also...
You cheapen it.
They also did the whole thing where Finn's... It's hinted that Finn has force abilities.
Yeah, a hunch.
Oh my gosh, that's so dumb.
Yeah, like, this is how we explain how he survived a fight with Kylo Ren and used a lightsaber without cutting his leg off in the first movie.
Right.
But stop cheapening these sacrifices. You had these great, compelling... If you want to take Star Wars into the new era... Then have someone die.
Yeah.
Have Finn do the heroic sacrifice that he should have done in episode 8.
Yes. This is Chewbacca's quote-unquote death was cheapened. It's like,
I know.
Oh my gosh,
Chewbacca just killed Chewie. Okay.
Never mind. 5 seconds later, Chewie's alive. Bang!
West End Games where they said, I don't care how high you roll the dice, you won't throw Star Destroyers around with your mind.
Yeah.
Now throw that out. Because Rey can.
Oh, we talked about that already. A couple of ones that bugged me. C-3PO. First of all, let's just say the word Sith a bunch of times. Sith, guys. Hey, Sith. I mean, Sith. Don't you like the Sith? Sith. Nostalgia Sith. You like us again, right? Star Wars Sicky Sith. And so there's a Sith language that 3PO knows. Don't ask. He just does.
Also, and, apparently the Sith language. Yeah, he knows. Yeah,
he knows. Oh, but he can't use it. We gave them the program, but prohibited him from using it?
Apparently, not just that. Every single one of those droids know the language.
Yeah, so wait. You gave all these protocol droids and translation droids the Sith language, but then you didn't allow them to. Why not just not give them the Okay, anyway.
Lock him up. Lock him up. Talk about misusing a server and some information.
No.
Jeez, that's a security risk.
Yeah.
So, and then another one that just a nitpick. Hey, Luke's X-Wing. All right. Wait, that thing still works? It's been sitting underwater for 40 years.
Okay. Yeah.
Or 20 years. I mean, if I took my car and dropped it in a lake and came back in 10 years, it's not starting. It's not starting. Parts
Future
have corroded.
Metal.
Shut.
Future metal. Protected by the Force.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Luke,
that's
put a Force bubble around it.
No, past
that. That's right. I'm sorry. For the same reason that Khan's blood resurrects people. It's the future, which is exactly what a friend of mine once said.
Long
time. It's the future. Oh, I'm sorry. That's just future.
Yeah, it's long, long time ago metal.
That is only in there for a nostalgia back to Empire to show Luke finally being able to do what he couldn't do.
And then it's cheapened
because Rey is holding the ship at power.
Right. Yeah, well, not just that, but this is the other thing where it's like this whole movie's nostalgia crap and crapping over every single...
Absolutely.
Chewie gets a medal because he never got a medal before. Oh, shut up.
Wow, we solved that problem that everyone needed solved.
It's always been implied that Palpatine was, like, so strong and that Luke wasn't strong enough. Vader wasn't strong enough. None of them were strong enough to take Palpatine down on his own. But now, the granddaughter of Palpatine is stronger than the son of Vader, and it's not even close. What Rey does in this movie, before she's all the Jedi... Luke can barely lift that X-Wing. And Rey is holding spaceships under thrust.
Yeah.
And blows it up with
and
her
then
mind.
Blows them up with lightning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Palpatine. It's all about the Palpatines.
Which goes back to the point. The Skywalkers are nothing.
Rock, paper, scissors, Palpatine.
Yes. Oh, yeah. This movie was frustrating and all over the place for so many reasons.
Can someone explain to me the force, the stupid Sith dagger? The thing that got left in a cave. There's an Abrams right there. Important things found
in caves
we accidentally fall into. So
it's the most impractical map ever.
Yeah.
It's
well, how about force that, healing? Tell me, so, force healing takes practice, right?
Oh yeah. Well, no, we'll get to that.
Okay.
The dagger. So it's a map. So Palpatine, he would die,
one of his followers,
made a dagger that then found its way to that planet, dropped in there, and then there's a little like.
You have
extractable
to
compass, so
you have
when
to
you
stand
combine
at
it up to the
point,
right Death Star.
Far-seeing. He knew he needed Rey and Kylo to get there 30
flat
years
out
ago.
This is the most wank-a-spank D&D writing adventure I've ever heard of in my life.
He made a heroic far-seeing roll and was able to see where he needed to leave it that far into the future after losing the Battle of Endor.
The only person...
But then he just didn't make enough because he didn't see his own death.
The only person who has better planning skills is Heath Ledger Joker from Dark Knight, who can know precisely where the helicopters are going to crash into, and he knows precisely where everything's going to go. The only one better than that is Joker, because how?
Oh,
and then the force healing. So
I assume.
Yeah. You want to talk about video game cure wounds. That's what it is. Cure wounds.
Well, again, because I know force heal is a thing.
Depending on where you want to go. So if you go to modern Star Wars, it just heals hit points instantly because video game. But if you go back to the original, which I like to do, D6 Star Wars. Yes, a Jedi could accelerate someone else's healing, but first of all, the person had to rest.
Also, don't you have to train in this?
Well, yeah, one, definitely.
She just,
knows everything. Well, right. She has the Jedi texts, which have everything, apparently.
Well, also,
Luke couldn't figure them out.
My other problem with force healing was that Kylo now knows it. Because he now switches to good and suddenly can force heal.
They're a dyad in the force, too.
They can do everything.
Remember the force teleport?
We haven't even talked about that. Force transport.
That's next. So, but the way the accelerating healing works in the original concept of the force was it really just gives you a boost. That's it. You have to rest. You have to recuperate. And then it just gave you an extra healing boost. That's it. It doesn't automatically work.
Yeah, but she's a Palpatine, so she's super powerful in the force.
There is a transfer force power. But what it really just does is if you are mortally wounded to the point where you're about to die, it stabilizes you so that you have like an extra hour to get medical help.
Exactly.
That's it. It's a great power to have, but it isn't the, you're about to die, let me resurrect you. No, it doesn't do that at all.
And you know, you guys may think we're crazy for going back to the D6 West End Star Wars game, and you're getting uber nerd
but they
there.
Had
but
good stuff.
But the and what's even more to that, it felt like there was a real tie-in between the Lucas group, the people writing the expanded universe, and West End. Like they were watching. West End was writing their source material based off of the expanded universe. The expanded universe wasn't writing it based off of West End, but West End was sitting there reading the books that Zahn and Kevin J. Anderson were writing and saying, so how do we take what they're showing Luke can do in this universe and move it into a game so that it makes sense? Concentration, tactical,
sometimes danger sense. Actually, there was sometimes collaboration. Timothy Zahn did write for a few things.
For the source books, yeah. You had cross-collaboration, and you'd see these force powers in books, and then West End would take them verbatim into their game.
Yeah, so...
And it was done well.
And that, you know, before we get into force teleportation... That brings up the point that J.J. Abrams himself brought up. Before the movie came out, a lot of people are not going to like the way I use the force in this. Yeah, because you're treating it like it's a ridiculous Superman comic. And I like Superman, by the way. But you keep escalating and escalating.
Well, it's also magic.
Marvel is not the MCU. Or excuse me, Star Wars is not the MCU. You can't have force teleport, which, what? Scott, go with that nip.
Well, yeah, I completely agree with you.
It's ridiculous. No,
the Force is now magic. I agree with you because it's like, what? You're just going, the Force can now do this because I want it
because
to.
Because I need it to.
Straight withered.
And like, we're not even, like, this isn't the only time. You can't just explain it away as the dyad in the Force. Luke projected himself across the galaxy and interacted with people.
Yeah.
Physically. So it shouldn't be surprising to you that Luke can interact with the Force as a the living universe as a Force ghost. Before he died, he had figured out how to project his own Force ghost across the galaxy and interact with the physical world and to see what was going on there somehow. So you're already laid the groundwork for this. The Force makes no sense at this point. Yeah, I mean, the Force never made sense. Let's be honest with that. I mean, the attempt to explain it with midichlorians was terrible, too. A field that surrounds us and binds us, this mystical energy field.
That was dumb. I won't deny.
It never made sense because it can't make sense. On no level can it make sense. But now, the Force is God. The Force is everything. The Force is anything you need it to be. So now, Wizard did it. Took something that was mystical, and you had to learn its ways, and there were some things that made sense as to why the Force could do the things that it could do, and then you just said, because the Force. I can fly like an eagle because the Force.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You can teleport matter between two people because they're Force dyads, because magic. Yeah.
The Force thing we just made up.
The Force surrounds this metal lightsaber, and I use the midichlorians in the metal to dematerialize it and send it through the field of energy to this part of the field and re-manifest itself.
You know what
Well,
I mean?
Actually, I use the midichlorians to take it apart and copy it and send a quantum entanglement single over here to these midichlorians to make it recreated.
You know what I thought about?
Well, I also have a huge problem with this. This is one thing that annoyed the crap out of me. Okay. Again, this is now what, the third Sith home planet?
Something like that.
Okay, we're now on the third Sith home planet, which...
Again, well, Korriban doesn't exist anymore, so...
Okay, yeah. Second, third, depend. Fine, there's a whole bunch of Sith home planets.
Rule of two, rule of three, rule of seven.
Whatever, like, whatever we needed.
Right, it's another new Sith planet, which, yippee, which, again, you can apparently only get to with a MacGuffin, but somehow the Emperor's there with the entire fleet. And a whole bunch of people building stuff, which...
And nobody knows and how they got
there. Yeah, and the Knights of Ren are there. And also, don't forget, he also has tens of thousands of Sith apprentices or something.
So, oh, yeah, where's that come from?
It's like, what?
A stadium of Sith?
Yeah, it's like...
What?
What? Apparently, you're off by yourself, but not by yourself, and you're totally in isolation,
he's using the midichlorians to create acolytes to worship him.
Oh, right, of course.
Oh, yeah.
That's right, of course. So,
I mean, there are so many things in this thing that just, what? And make no sense, and again, break the entire movie, or break Star Wars itself, where you just go, well, again, the Hodo maneuvers used again in this.
This is why you have to make and establish rules, and when you don't, you just find situations where, well, I guess everything counts now because the Force.
We're getting so long now, I don't remember we talked about this, but we talked about how much of a one-trick pony Palpatine is. All of his plans come down to kill me. By killing me, I win.
Yes.
That's an amazing plan where you put someone in a binder. If you don't kill me, I win. If you kill me, I win. Heads, I win. Tails, you lose. Yeah. It's amazing. And then he somehow loses anyway. But it's always, well, if you go back to my interpretation, now he did win at Jedi.
Actually,
he still won.
Which again,
Jedi.
Which was when I literally
10
rolled my eyes.
He really won this.
Yeah,
really?
I agreed because I rolled my eyes.
Oh, she killed me.
So that's anyway, right, what I'm going to do is what? Yell a lot.
That's why he let himself be killed.
Oh, why he let himself get electrocuted?
She killed him.
So we're going to get an episode 10 when he's still around, yep.
No, he's going to take over Rey.
Oh.
It's a transference.
I gotcha.
And so, it's just not there yet. He's still working his way through to take control.
I gotcha. So
episode, you kill Palpatine, he wins. You don't kill Palpatine, he wins.
So in episode 10, she will start succumbing to the dark side and letting her anger control her. There you go.
Speaking of which,
let it die.
Speaking of which, great dialogue at that scene. She will take out her lightsaber. She will take the steps towards me. She will do this. It's like, wow.
Wait. Are you
Abram,
meaning?
If you're trying to make this sound like cool and cultish right now, you're not doing it.
What happened was he accidentally gave the Emperor the screenplay, and now Ray walks towards the Emperor.
Yeah. You're reading the stage Emperor directions right now.
Yeah. I mean,
Why are you reading the stage directions?
I'm going to start doing that now. He opens the pantry. Yeah. He will now take the peanut butter out.
The actress.
He will remove the cap.
She looks towards the camera and delivers her soliloquy.
And now...
Off stage, the acolytes rise into the camera view as the camera pans 360 degrees.
The Abrams will collect a large check. He will laugh that he got paid for utter crap.
Actress now uses prop to pretend to be a lightsaber. Effects added in post.
And post effects of me...
He now speaks technobabble.
So there's a... we could nitpick forever, but I think...
Good grief. We could probably make a two-hour show of nitpicks.
One more thing I want to mention before we move on. The light, you said Palpatine's a one-trick pony. It reminds me of when Conan O'Brien teamed up with Robot Chicken, and instead of Conan, it was Late Night with Zuckuss instead of Late Night with Conan O'Brien. And they did the gag where, someone is on screen. Yeah. They show a picture and someone's mouth is moving for him. And Conan, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I remember.
And they had Palpatine and they're like, Palpatine, what are you going to do about the Rebel Alliance? They've already done substantial damage. How will you solve this? By the same way I solve every problem, by shooting it with lightning. And then after that, I shall eat some pudding. Well, they've already caused a great disruption. I'll show you a great disruption in my adult undergarments.
Yeah, it's true. It's like
by shooting it with lightning.
Yeah, he's a one trick. Well, again, you were right, because this is it's a one trick pony. The end battle is all the Sith versus all the Jedi. What?
Really?
What?
We're all with you, Rey. We can't impact the living world, but we're here. Go, Rey, go. Go, Rey, go. She's our girl. If she can't do it, no one can.
I was really waiting and hoping that someone would say, all the stars are dead Jedi. I was hoping someone would say that.
I was waiting for Mace Windu to step onto the scene and say he survived the fall and has been recovering. I'm with you, Rey.
I was also really hoping that Rey would walk on water when she went to the Death Star 2. Because when Luke lifted the X-Wing out, I was like, please let Luke be doing it. Please let Luke be doing it. Yes, it's stupid. He's doing it. I was hoping they would do a walk on water scene. Unfortunately, they didn't. I was let
no, she was just
down.
You got her floating rocks around her to begin with. So that was.
But I thought that was cool because they weren't like boulders or anything. But anyway, I want to. There's two more points we got to make. And Scott's going to have a deep meaning that I'm going to let. I promise I will shut up and let him have it. In exchange, Scott has to shut up and let me have my point here.
Deal.
Okay. There's an overall problem with the sequel trilogy here and Star Wars in general right now, with some exceptions being like the Mando. And that is, you've heard a lot of problems with different reviewers. And I'm going to bring one up that probably isn't too popular, but I think it bears mentioning. Timelessness. Star Wars is timeless. When you look at the original concept, even one through three, it's very difficult for a story to be timeless or even a theology to be timeless. Okay. You look at something like Buddhism or Christianity, they've withstood the test of time. Zoroastrian didn't, and it was similar to those two. So you look at, even if you're not a Christian, you can look at some of the teachings of Jesus and be like, yeah, right on. Yeah. Or even Buddha. I'm a Christian, but I have to look at the Eightfold Path and go, well, I mean, yeah, he's right. You should be practicing right speech. You should be doing that. And that's, of course, coming from my Christian point, but it's not something I'm going to disagree. I'm not going to get up and say he's wrong because he's a Buddhist. Well, no, there's a timeless feature to that. And when you put this in a story element, traditional mythology lasts because there's a time, or fairy tales last because there's a timeless quality about it. Something everyone can relate to regardless of the story, the era. Recently, we've gotten into this annoying habit of becoming Metacritic to everything instead of just recognizing that maybe something is a product of its time. And no, it doesn't make sense to us, but you know what? It's a product of its time. Maybe we could change a meaning that is applicable to us without changing the whole story and going Metacritic on it. But that's what we do now. And Star Wars is that kind of timelessness. I've seen a lot of critics and journalists with nothing to do with their lives, I guess, say how Star Wars had a social meaning. Star Wars had a social meaning. Sure, it did, but it was very overall basic and timeless. Here's what we had. We had tyranny is bad. Anybody against that so far? Anybody except a tyrant? Okay, we're all good. Okay. Democratic Republic or something like it is good. Okay. Everybody so far? Okay, so far good. Let's see. Bad guys are bad. Okay. Bad guys are bad. I think we're all good with that. And then you could even go a David and Goliath story. Again, is anyone going to look at that and go, nope, that's it. There's your social meaning. Otherwise, it's a mythological family saga. It's got a timeless quality to it. And now we've lost it. We've decided that we need to change it in the same way that we need to take fairy tales and meta. We have to meta it. We can't just tell the fairy tale. We have to interject our modern opinion to it. We have to change it. We have to make sure that everybody knows how wrong it is and how right I am in my modern genius enlightened way. Or we just need to make it fit modern standard. But that's not what you do. What's timeless. You don't, because that's a either it's got a timeless message or it's a piece, or it's a product of its era. Why are you changing it? Why are you taking the Breaking Bad treatment to Star Wars? It doesn't fit. You don't take timeless and change it to modern perception and think that you're somehow, I call it progressivism as far as writing. It's, we have to make everything constantly progressive. Well, no, we don't. Some things don't require that. But it's like taking a hammer and deciding, well, we need to make that progressive somehow. It's a hammer. It serves its purpose. Or trying to take a screwdriver and say, let's do something different with it. Let's drive nails with it. Well, yeah, you can do that. And maybe someone's going to think that's a genius, but the rest of the world's going to look at it and go, you've made a colossal mess. And I made in my notes here, need Charlie Bucket. And here's my point. That in Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, the one with Gene Wilder, the great one, at the end, Charlie asks Mr. Wonka, why did you do this way? He wants to know, why did you do the golden tickets? What was the point of this? To which point he says, well, Charlie, I'm getting older and I can't do this forever and I don't want to try. And I needed someone to take over the factory. But who am I going to get? An adult? No, they'll just do everything their way. I needed to get a child, someone that I could teach how to do this. And that's what we needed. And that's why the Mandalorian has hope. Because even the Yoda thing with him having force powers, I'm not a big fan of that. But I'm willing to overlook it. Because you can tell Dave Filoni and Jon Favreau have talked to George Lucas. They want to do Star Wars the right way. They want to keep it the way it is. They want to keep it timeless. But then you get your giant Rian Johnsons. Then you get all these other people that want to come along and they just think it's, we got to make it different. We got to make it modern. No, you need to make a Charlie Bucket. And if the argument, maybe the journalists will come out and say, well, if you can't do something new and progressive with it, then why are we making more movies? Exactamundo! My point exactly! My exact point! We were done with episode 6! The story was over! It's timeless! Use it to make something else! I have no problem with the Mando because it's just saying, hey, let's make a minor story somewhere else in the galaxy. It's a big galaxy. We can keep this timelessness going with something else. Sure. That's okay. But the movies are done. It's over. I agree with you, journalist who complains that it's an old story. It is. Make something else. Quit taking what is timeless. Look, man, Star Trek, I have seen a little bit of Star Trek Discovery. Here's why I don't like it. It disregards previous Trek. It's clearly writers that don't care and can't be bothered to care about what came before. Plus, they write the same old dumb trap of making technology that negates the point of other things. But I certainly am not complaining about the fact that they interjected modern issues and modern opinions. Because Star Trek has always done that. This is where Scott can answer. Is that true?
It's absolutely true.
I mean, Star Trek has always addressed the new issue. It's always tried to tackle the new thing and catch up to modern times.
It's an exploration of society and the human condition.
Yes.
Star Wars is not.
When I see Star Trek doing that, I can't complain. That's what it does. Star Wars, on the other hand, is a timelessness. And that's the problem, guys. If you can't do that, and that's what they tried to do, and that flopped. And that's the whole problem with the sequel trilogy, with even Solo, with even Rogue One. You wanted to you get some writers that wanted to do their own thing when they really just needed, Willy Wonka really just needed Charlie Bucket. And instead, we got Slugworth. And that is, I guess you could call that Rage Master's deep meaning there.
That was so, a really good segment there,
man. And I'm gonna shut up now and let Scott have his deep meaning.
You want to give me the deep meaning music?
This is a failed Scott's deep meaning.
This is a failed deep meaning. And it's a really failed, it's a failed character arc. It's a failure of, you're supposed to see your character grow. You're supposed to accomplish something. In the original trilogy, you see Luke go from wide-eyed, impulsive farm kid who's ruled by his emotions. In Empire, he goes running off against Yoda and Ben's wishes to go try to save his friends, even though he can lose everything. In Jedi, you see a calm, collected, fully realized Jedi Master who is master of his emotions, master of his situation. There is a character arc here. Gone is the wide-eyed, naive, impulsive farm boy. In this place is this grown man who's gained wisdom. In the prequel, you see the altruistic, good, caring kid who gets warped into a hurt, wounded, angst-filled teenager and young man who throws everything away because he's too hurt to face up to what he did. And you see that character arc of Anakin, and you see that redemption. You see these, and they're good, fulfilling, satisfying character arcs. Rey is a woman running from her past, a woman who doesn't know who she is, a woman who doesn't want to face who she is. Through this entire time, it's the mystery of who she is, and she's supposed to come to terms with that. And you get into episode 9, and she says, nobody knows who I am. Nobody knows me like me. And people are telling her they know who they are. She says, everybody knows who I am. And she's supposed to be coming to terms with that and making peace with who she truly is. And she spent her whole life trying to find out who that is so that she can embrace that and become the most self-actualized version of herself. The message in this new Disney verse is be who you are. Be okay with who you are. Be proud of who you are. Embrace it. Embrace why you're different. She finds out she's a Palpatine. And she's given this moment at the end to say, finally, you're Rey who? And you finally, after all of her journey, put the question to her of, you are Rey who? And she lies and buries the identity of Rey Palpatine to take the identity of Rey Skywalker. She runs from her nature. She runs from her heritage. She runs from who she is. And she still hasn't come to terms with it. If she had come to terms with her lineage, who she is, what is inside her, the conflict inside of her, she would have said, Rey Palpatine. Instead, she said, the cozy, friendly, fun name of Rey Skywalker. So she chose to run away from that. That's a failed deep meaning. That's failed writing. That's maybe in an egregious trilogy of errors. The biggest error you made. Because now she has no arc. She is the person still running from who she is. She is the person forgetting who she is, not embracing who she is. All of her journey has been to that point to go, nah, I want to be this. It's a terrible decision. It cheapens all of it. And it sends a message of, oh, when you find out that you come from a bad lineage, don't say, I'm this person and I can make my own way. Hide who it is because you don't want to be bound to who your evil grandfather was. It's a terrible message. It really is. It fails on so many levels. And so that's my failed deep meaning. The better way to end that movie would have been to her say, Ray Palpatine, cue the John Williams music, throw it off of there, and the title should have been The Rise of Skywalker, or if you don't want to do that, The Rise of Rey.
Yeah, okay.
The Force accepted. I don't know. Something. But The Rise of Skywalker is idiotic. There's no Rise of Skywalker in this. There's the exit of Skywalker. There's the death of Solo, because he's not a Skywalker. And there is the rise of the Palpatine family. There's no Rise of Skywalker. There's no Rise of Skywalker. It's this. If you wanted that to be the case, then have the Luke that died and ran away to be a clone in a misdirection. And the real Luke comes back and rises to the occasion out of his hiding. That would have been fine. It's the rise of Palpatine. It's a terrible thing. It was a misstep and maybe the most egregious damage done to a character, including Luke, in this entire trilogy.
Okay, so rating this week is going to be a little bit different. We're going to rate the film on its own merit. Then we're going to say, how does it affect your view of the sequel trilogy? And then finally, how does it affect the whole saga for you? And so let's just start with the film itself. I don't think I need to say too much. I'm putting this as a 1 or a 2, maybe a 3, because it had good C-3PO. I liked the Rey training, and I liked the visuals of the planets. That is all.
It's a 5 out of 10. Bringing back Palpatine was a good mechanism to make me care about a character. I was Team Palpy leading up to this. I still hope he somehow won, and episode 10 is about the return of Palpatine. But, because he's the only guy I care about at this point. There was good in here. C-3PO was fantastic. There was real potential here, and I felt that this was the best possible recovery you could have made from the has-to-be-intentional decapitation of the franchise by Rian Johnson. So, I'm okay with this. It showed me that you can start to learn from your mistakes, dig your way out of the hole, and that you might have learned from the monstrosity that was Last Jedi, Solo, and Rogue One.
By itself, it's okay. 5. And pretty much for all the same reasons.
All right, let's serpentine this. So, send it back, Thomas, with how,
so
it
how does it
the
affect
trilogy.
The sequel trilogy to you?
Well, it's over. Woo! There's that.
There's that.
But because of 8, I feel like it does not help because it was crashing. I mean, it was, you had a plane with all the engines out. It was going downhill. You managed to walk away from the crash. It's still a crash. There's no way around that. It's a crash.
It's solely in the Hudson River.
Yeah. So overall, this gets a 3 for the whole series, because being 7, 8, 9, there were points in this series, your 3 movies, where I hate it, despise it, and I never thought I'd say that about Star Wars. So this is the thing where I'm like, ugh. You might have kind of pulled it up, but it still is in the Hudson. So.
It lands somewhere in the middle. The prequel trilogies, I said before episode 3 came out that George Lucas had a ton riding on 3, and he had to pull something great out to salvage the whole prequel trilogy, and he did, in my mind. My opinion's always been that episode 3 saved the prequel trilogies, and by its existence pulls up those first two movies, and then the finish of 3 helps you as you lead into 4. This movie can't do that. Rian Johnson put you in such a hole you can never dig out of it, because he had killed every character that you ever cared about, and he had undone the achievements of every character that you ever cared about. It's a disjointed, rambling, unconnected series of movies. And it honestly, this movie pulls the trilogy back up, because I thought Force Awakens gets off to a good start with like a 7, a 7.5. It was fun. It was entertaining. There's some characters introduced who could be very interesting if you know what to do with them in the next couple of movies. What's going on with Luke? What's he going to do when he steps back on? Can we see him, you know, rally the troops here. Han's death was poignant and powerful. And then Rian Johnson just intentionally shot the thing in the balls repeatedly with a blaster at point blank range. And then this did the best it could to save it. So I'll give the whole trilogy like a 4, a 3.5, a 4. It's bad. It's the worst effort out of them all. And honestly, I'd rather watch the 2 standalone movies over this entire trilogy if I had to again. And I don't like those movies. One's a train heist.
Okay, so how does it affect the whole saga? Well, first of all, the sequel trilogy. Yeah. I'm sorry, I skipped ahead. How does it affect the sequel trilogy? This is going to be interesting for you guys. It simultaneously makes me hate 8 more because of what it did to the story. But as if you told me, if somehow you put a gun to my head and said you can watch 8 or 9, I would watch 8 for one reason. At least it's a story I can follow. I hate it. I hate it more now that 9 came out. But I can follow the story. 9 is such a cluster mess. Like I said, the only way people are convincing themselves this is good is because the action. Action, action, action. They've decided to take the Michael Bay route. Because like my boss even said, I can't follow the story. It's not good. So to me, that's so funny because if you're going into this to watch a story and your answer is, well, the story sucked. Doesn't that make it bad? That's like saying, well, I know the cheeseburger sucked, but hey, that bun was good. That was a good bun. Real good bun.
No, it would be
it was
more
a pretty
like
good burger. It was a pretty good burger because the bun was good. They toasted it
some
just
really,
right.
Really
good French fries. It was good French fries.
Yeah.
It wasn't even the burger sucked.
The meat was rancid. The pickles were rotted. It was undercooked.
But that was a well toasted bun.
It's the best mustard I've ever had.
Exactly. So you force yourself to lower the bar, which is fine. But as I do with Star Crash, just admit you like something that sucked. But honestly, if I had to watch all 3 movies, I'd rather watch 7. I'd much rather watch 7 because even though I didn't like 7, it didn't feel like Star Wars. It was a more positive experience. Definitely. So then let's bring it down. How does it affect the whole saga? For me, it doesn't because in my Star Wars, 7, 8, and 9 don't exist. So therefore, 1 through 6 doesn't, because if I included 7, 8, and 9, then 1 through 6 become partially pointless.
Agreed.
In fact, once you watch part 3, why would I bother with 4, 5, 6? Those people are all a bunch of losers. Luke is a loser. Vader's a loser. Leia's a shouldn't
you mean once
be a
you
loser,
watch episode but, 9, right?
Huh?
Episode 9?
Yeah, once you watch episode 9.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
1
yeah.
through 6.
You said 3.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. Once you watch 9, everybody in 1 through 6 just becomes a bunch of losers, and the whole story just becomes R.E.M.'s song. Everybody hurts unless you're Palpatine. Because everybody hurts except for Palpatine. You know.
Yeah. No, I get you.
Yeah, so 7, 8, 9 just don't exist.
I've really got to agree a lot with Rage Master here. Here's the problem. It doesn't just hurt the whole saga. It destroys the 6 movies that came before. Disney was so intent on clearing the stage to focus on their new characters. They did it in the worst way possible. They wanted you to focus on them first. They wanted to tell their new story first. And so they killed off Han. They killed off Luke. And they just went out of their way. They minimized R2. R2 is shut down for the whole movie in the first film. They minimized 3PO in the first 2 movies. R2 has almost no role other than standing cameo in the whole new trilogy. You went out of your way every single time to take the old characters and throw them out. But you did it in the worst way possible. Han and Leia become deadbeat parents. Han is a failed dad who fails so badly that he returns to illegal crime. Leia fails so badly at running the New Republic that she loses it to the First Order. She then fails so badly running the Resistance that at the end of 8, it exists solely in the contents of the Millennium Falcon.
But Scott, these characters are authentic and grounded.
Luke fails so bad as the new Jedi Master and the caretaker of a 10,000-year-old order that he ends up almost killing his nephew because he sensed bad in him where he never went away from his father, but he'll possibly kill his nephew and raise his lightsaber against him, and then be so unable to control it that he lets his nephew kill all of his students. And then, while Luke is watching the galaxy fall apart around him, instead of doing what he did once before and fighting to save it, he runs and hides, stops using the Force, hides the sacred texts, okay? Luke fails. He fails and he fails and he fails in the most spectacular way possible. Lando comes back as decrepit and old.
It was hard to see him.
I mean, everyone is a failure. They bring back the Millennium Falcon as a piece of junk. The first thing they refer to it as the piece of junk. That's kind of okay with the Falcon, but because it's always joked about that way, it's over and over and over again, it's bad. You know? And you destroy the soul of the first six movies. And then you take away the redemption of Vader means nothing. All the sacrifices mean nothing. None of it means a thing. Admiral Akbar gets sucked out a window in the worst losing battle ever. He deserved better than that. But you can't, because you got to clear the way for Admiral Holdo, because if you don't kill Akbar, then why isn't he in charge? It destroys the whole thing. The only way to go back and salvage your... You know, people joked about Lucas destroying your childhood. The only way to really maintain yourself as a Star Wars fan is to say that these movies just don't happen. You chalk them up to fan fiction. You chalk them up to a reboot, and you say, you know, it just didn't go beyond... Six is where it ended. And then, you know, go back to the original Disney Expanded Universe, which, not Disney Expanded Universe, the original Lucas Expanded Universe, which at least maintained, they understood the characters better. They understood the universe better. They understood the fans better. And it made more sense. This is an assault on the characters, not the fandom, but the characters. And you can't, these three films together take the greatest six film story that I've ever seen and reduce it to a three. It's that bad. There's nothing redeemable about those first six movies. It's the same thing I said with Dune. When I read 18 books to find it's all about Duncan, Idaho, I wasted my time. All right, I'm done.
All right. I am in mostly agreement with you for the simple fact that, yeah, like, I admittedly, you know, the old canon of Star Wars got a little crazy at points. I mean, went nuts, but
Yuuzhan Vong was a mistake.
It went somewhere. It had some interesting stories.
They took
stories.
It too far. I think they got to a point where they just kept running with it instead of ending it, and then it got really stupid.
I'm saying at some points, yeah, it had some very interesting stories and some interesting concepts and some good stuff.
Yeah, like Chewie dying wasn't so bad, okay, but it did get way out of hand.
It's a great death. He saved Han's son. It would have been a better death if Anakin doesn't die very shortly afterwards, but...
Yeah, but this is the thing where I look at these three have killed Star Wars for me. I still will... I will always like 4, 5, and 6.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because I watched them with my dad. Something we did that I will always like because of that. Because it's that. Not because they're great now. No, because these three have taken my Star Wars, taken it out back, dug a ditch, shot it in the head, lit it on fire, and buried it. And then made sure no one could find the grave. Because, I'm sorry, this has destroyed everything that made Star Wars Star Wars for me. Because Star Wars was this great story of redemption, of had deep meaning, a great idea behind it. Some of it didn't make sense, didn't care, it had the good story, it worked. The prequels was stupid, had terrible CGI, had terrible dialogue, but at least carried on that same story and gave you more information. It was something. This just killed it. And that's something that's sad because I liked Star Wars.
The prequels worked because you wanted to see the Republic at its height. The prequels worked because you wanted to see the rise of Sidious. The prequels worked because you wanted to see Anakin and his fall. You wanted to see Obi-Wan before he was fat and old, and you wanted to see Yoda.
It continued
and
the
story. Jedi Council.
It carried it on, yeah.
It did what a prequel was supposed to do. It gave you information about existing characters that you already cared about in existing parts of the world. This trilogy went the other way and just said, we're going to burn it all down. And unlike, though, Thomas, you know, I said it, if you take it as a whole, it makes it a 3 for me. I will still love episodes 1-6 because they work as a self-contained.
I agree with you.
Set of 6 films. I just have to pretend and choose that nothing, that it ends at Jedi. And
me
people
too.
Can say you can't do that, but I can.
Yes, you can.
I have the option of which storyline to follow. And I've said before, maybe it's easier for me to do this because I had to do that with Star Trek. So many times Star Trek have been rebooted and continued under different visions, non-canon books, and picking and choosing of what makes sense and what doesn't. I was able to do that. So I can dismiss 65-year-old Beverly Crusher popping out a kid to 80-year-old Jean-Luc Picard and him winning hand-to-hand combat with a Klingon at 83. You I can just dismiss that because I'll pick the good stuff other stories.
I agree because I'm 100% in the same camp where I'm like 1-6 are good. After that, it's just terrible. Yeah. I just have to stop because if I do not stop, it drops the whole Star Wars series to almost a 0 because it's now like
4.
I'm watching all these movies for nothing. It's
4, 5, and 6 will always be timeless. They're great films.
Yes.
They will always be that. And nothing that happened in 7, 8, and 9 can destroy them on their own. But if you watch it as 9 films, boy, it gets bad.
Well, yeah, because then I'm wasting a good grief. It's like 2, 6, how many hours? I'm wasting what, 14? 15, 16 hours of my life?
It's like Dune. I would tell you if you read Dune, stop after Children of Dune. Don't get to God Emperor. And just stop. Be done. Don't read the House series. Don't read any of it. Stop at Children of Dune. And it's a great 3-book series. Game of Thrones? Stop at Storm of Swords. Don't read another book after Storm of Swords. And you'll love Game of Thrones. This is just one of those things.
Well, and especially considering 6 wraps it all up in a neat little tidy package.
Oh, yeah.
So to say, no, it was always meant to be this way. Oh, really? Then why does it wrap up so neat and tidy? So
speaking of wrapping up, we had an hour and 40 minutes almost.
Wow. Yeah, guys, long this review. Is a long
so,
one.
So I think I could end it with this final note that we all agree that the sequel trilogy is a big. So,
coming up soon, our crossover podcast with the Lunatic Parade.
Yeah, we're pretty sure of that. So, I don't want to say much more than that, but stay tuned. Stay tuned.
Coming up soon, my favorite time of the year.
Oh, yes.
Trekking into the new year. We're going to get to my 4 favorite Star Trek The Next Generation episodes that I think are the best. I'm going to do a supplemental which takes you through episodes 5-10 that I didn't choose. If you want to watch along with us, we will start with The Defector, which is a season 3 episode, and I'll elaborate more as to why
which
I put
episode
this one on here.
Which you have
most
a number?
People do yeah. not. I want to say it's like episode 12, but let me pull up Netflix here and see
He's
how
gonna
good
find
my memory
out.
Is.
I'm just, but I just ask these things because I'm always impressed with Scott's Star Trek knowledge.
This is one of the episodes that people are going to go, why is this on here? It's not on here just to make my list different. Personally, I think this is one of the best episodes they ever did. And I've always thought that it is. If you ever want to meet someone who says that Kirk is more of a bad A than Picard, show them this episode, because this is Picard at his best in being that guy. It's episode 10. Did I say 12?
Yeah,
12 is the high.
10
one.
It is. Okay.
Season 3, episode 10, The Defector. It is absolutely one of my favorite episodes ever.
And if you want to comment, as we did get a comment on the Mando episode. So
that was
nice.
Ethan again. So,
Ethan, thanks a lot. Ethan, if you're still listening, thanks a lot. And if you or anyone else wants to comment, they can do so at...
They can leave a message on our website at ravinglunaticmedia.com. You can use our inactive email address, contact@ravinglunaticmedia.com. You can use our probably soon to be inactive Twitter account at Sci-Fi Melody or our never used Instagram account at ravinglunaticmedia.com.
But
or
the
no,
best
Raving Lunatic Media on Instagram.
Best way is the website though, right?
Well, I think I also have a Twitter account, Media Raving. Right, but the best way is to either comment on iTunes.
Quit throwing out episodes. Quit throwing out mediums which would fail.
Just leave us a 5-star review and a comment on iTunes, or go to our website at ravinglunaticmedia.com, because the traffic from China has dried up and we need traffic.
Also, if you would like to comment, you can also leave us a smoke signal. Also, we take messages in bottles. Just letting you know.
What's left to do, Rage Master?
Stay sick, sickies. What was that?
The conclusion of the Skywalker saga.
Spirit, tell me, these are not tidings of things to come. What are those things moving near you, by your feet?
These are the children that ruined Star Wars. Behold, greed and poor writing.
Remove them from my sight, Spirit. Please tell me, is this the best science fiction has to offer?
Cannot answer, I can.
What's becoming of you? Why are you speaking and fading like that?
Time for me to depart it is. Comes does the future.
When does it arrive? What should I expect?
Farewell, Scrooge Master.
Spirit? Spirit! Where are you? Oh, good gracious. What are all those voices?
Hey, Wage, what did you think of episode 9?
Oh, Star Wars, where are you, Star Wars? Disney killed Star Wars, please end. Ow, Star Wars, so far away wars from good Star Wars, end. And hey, did you see that Holdo maneuver? And wow, the Force can do anything. What's the point? We created story threats that can't be beat. Did we ever have a plan? Ow, Star Wars. So screwed up, Star Wars. Make no more Star Wars. And they made too many movies. Star Wars!
Swung out and crushed to deep left center, way back! That's a home run for the Rage Master.